Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Books Boys, live from the Grand Library, the Dean and PJ.
PJ.
Hello there.
I'm the Dean and we are the Books Boys.
The one and only.
This is the Books Boys show. Get it? Buy it? Books.
Books. I have to excuse myself because I've got a bit of a quiver in my voice. Hold on. Let me just fix the throat.
How's that? Oh, no, you've gone the other way.
It's a lot better. So, welcome to Books Boys. We're talking about some incredible books this episode. This is my new stage voice.
We actually nailed the intro for the first time in 4 months, but now it's gone weird since then, so I don't know.
I thought the demographic might appreciate a bit more of a sensual voice.
It makes me weak at the knees, PJ. So.
Well, anyway, yeah, guys, you can decide. Now, here's the next poll. This is going to put a lot of controversy. Forget the next elections or whatever, U.S. elections. It's all about, do you prefer the old-fashioned format or do you like this new sensual direction the episode is going to?
Booksboys@hotmail.com. Let us know. Maybe we'll totally change the show. Maybe it'll not be about books. Maybe we can get PJ selling some sexy perfumes or something.
And I like to emphasize the hot in the Hotmail.
Okay.
Now, and in this episode, you're accompanied by the sea and by winds. So
why is that, PJ? Where are you?
Well, I am in Spain again. Yes, once again on the roads, but I'm back in my hometown. So it's not. Like, it's kind of more of a going back to my upbrings. I decided I need a bit of home again. So I'm enjoying being Gran Canaria. And yeah, hopefully I have more time for reading in October.
Nice.
As well.
I did some traveling this month myself. I'm actually off to Spain for a good portion of next month. But this month I did visit London. Went over to see Dark Place Robert from our Patreon show and spent a long weekend in London. Although it was nice. It was very strange because I arrived the day the Queen died,
so it was
a very strange atmosphere, you know.
That's bizarre, yeah.
It was my first time there, but I got to see nice things. I saw Shakespeare's Globe Theatre, I saw The Mousetrap, the Agatha Christie play, so, you know, got to do some
literature. Oh, you saw that?
Yeah, I did.
Wow, okay, that's the longest running play ever on Earth, right?
I think so, yeah.
That's a very big statement
to make.
I'm not sure if that...
You check out those other planets, and we don't know.
Okay, let us know.
This month's sponsor, Venus Theater. No.
Good, okay. And we're not tempted to also see a Shakespeare play, because that's what I would have been tempted also.
Yeah, just in terms of the fact that I was only there for 3 days, I didn't get everything to do, but I will go back, because I want to see a Shakespeare play... I want to go to more museums, maybe get into St. Paul's Cathedral. Okay. There's more things that I just didn't have time to do, you know?
And how was Agatha Christie's Mousetrap? Is it a good play?
It was very good. The acting was good. I went with Dark Place Robert and another friend, and we all enjoyed it. We all thought it was very good. Now, I like that vibe a little bit more than they do. They thought it was very sort of the pretentious English vibe isn't necessarily for them, but they still really, really enjoyed the play. So that's good.
Cool. Okay.
And it is a big twist. Dude, you don't know what's going to happen, but you know it's a good play. If you're ever in London, go see it.
Well, dude, look, and I was thinking, this whole, we've been discussing books now for almost 2 years. So tune in next month. It's going to be a heck of a show.
Anniversario.
Anniversario. And we've been talking 2 years philosophically on what books it is, and I've been analyzing and looking up in supermarkets and not in the toilet section and all that stuff. So I think I've got it. I went to the bookkeeper because those are people that keep books.
I think so.
So I thought, why not go to bookkeepers? Yeah. So I went to them.
Yeah.
And when I entered, I really enjoyed the enthusiasm. There was a lot of enthusiasm. I thought, this is great. These are guys predominantly. I was a bit surprised. I didn't really see that many women, but okay. Guys that are into books. And they're not really the bookish type. So it's kind of breaking the stereotype. They don't really look like. But I like that. Everyone's welcome to read books. The thing is, it was very horse themed. I was wondering about that. So I don't know what's that about. Is that a niche like horror themed literature at the moment? Not sure.
It's they've moved on from Twilight. They're just into horses now, the kids.
With Black Beauty and all that stuff, must be a classic in there. But I didn't see much reading either. That's the thing. I saw a lot of kind of intense writing. I like that. So there seemed to be like an intense writing workshop going on.
Right.
And I thought that might be some beat pop poetry, And yeah, it was very bebop, it was very kind of like love numbers, very experimental stuff. So these guys, I think they're onto something. I couldn't really decipher what's going on there.
I've got a good idea. So this sounds like a really cool jazzy kind of place, a bit of, kind of slam poetry vibes maybe.
Yeah, they're kind of a lot of numbers. Seems to be a big thing, numbers and horses at the moment. I love enthusiasm, so I enjoyed the enthusiasm. It turned very Dostoevskian at one point. For some reason, they start talking about debts. And like owing money, and I thought, all right, they're probably analyzing the gambler or the player from Dostoevsky. So I think they're maybe, I'm not quite sure what the deal is yet. So I'm still trying to decipher. I'll have a visit next time. It cost me a lot of money.
It cost you? Oh no! It cost me a lot of money. I'm gonna give you your homework.
I don't know why.
To go back and do some more investigations.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, there was a lot of crying and shouting, so I liked the enthusiasm. I'm just not quite sure what it's about.
Very romantic setting, guys. If anyone can help us,
do you think they'd be open? Well, do you think they'd be open to Shakespeare discussion?
I would hope so. I mean, all humans really should be. I would certainly hope so. But it sounds like an interesting place that you went to. Just on the money front, I'm sorry that you spent some money. I don't know if you're aware that here in the UK we've had a lot of strikes lately, and little Alfred did go on strike. He's not here today. But as
I
a result,
he gets he's the most well paid from all.
He's getting a pay rise, man. So I don't know. I don't know what to do. He's got more vacation days as well, so he's not here today. He's taken the vacation.
Right.
He's really doing a number on us, you know.
I don't know what to say. I'm speechless, I have to say. I might have to go to my bookkeepers because they talk a lot. I'm not sure what they say, but they're into their theatrics,
Well,
so talking about le books, what have you read this
Well, I've read a fair bit. Now, that may or may not surprise you.
Well, I'm shocked, I'm literally shocked.
You're in shock. Part
figuratively,
two.
Metaphorically.
Part two of Don Quixote. Don't be literally shocked. Hopefully there's no lightning on your Spanish beach there.
Okay.
Part two.
So
Don
Quixote part two.
De la Mancha.
You finished it then, did you?
Well, technically I can never say I've read it all. And I'll tell you why.
What do you mean?
There's a misprint. And there's a 40 page section that's missing. No, 40 out of 1,000. I don't mind.
Okay, but that might have been the story, the Anna Karenina method. They might have accidentally.
That was the whole story. They printed the same 40 pages twice in a row and then missed the real second 40 pages, So.
No, that's what makes the book so modernist, you see, that he started to mirroring. It's a modernist approach, you see.
I like it, actually. I like it. It's a very interesting concept. Look, what I'll say about this part. So you haven't read this part, is that right? You only read part one. Is that correct?
No, exactly. Yes, I honestly haven't finished part one. I'd like to give it a try again. I just like to recap to the listeners. Started reading this book, was very enthusiastic, but I had difficulties with its length and just like the whole kind of just went on a bit. So I'd like to try it again. And you said that as well last episode, right? That you found a bit like just a bit wordy.
Yeah, I mean, I took a break between the two parts just because I needed a palate cleanser, you know. So.
Well, Cervantes took a 10-year, you know, there was a 10-year break for most readers back between 1605 and 1615. So you were too fast. You should have waited.
I've done
years.
It in 1 month. I've really done too fast.
10 years.
We talked a lot about it last time, so I'm not going to spend too long on it today. But what I will say is, in the beginning, I preferred part two. I find it a bit more approachable. It was a bit less silly, but I just find it to be more of a story. Okay, so that was in the first half. Then it kind of lost me in the second half. And if I'm honest...
You're talking about part one here.
I'm talking about not all of part two that I read this month, okay?
Part two.
So the first half of part two, I really enjoyed. And I actually thought part two was better than part one. But it kind of lost me as it went on.
Oh, no. Okay.
I think the silliness from part one was lacking, and actually in a way it did make the book more fun, you know, these little adventures, and this was fine.
That's what I liked about it the most. Yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of wears off in this part, and we spend a long, long time doing the same thing. But to set the scene, what happens is because of the time distance, right? Everyone in the book is aware of the book, and they've all read part one.
What? So this actually really is meta fiction.
They've all read part one of Don Quixote. And again, like, who's this fool kind of going around, you know, and they're all aware of it. And there's even a fake Don Quixote imposter at one point. And there's an imposter part two. So someone actually publishes part two of Don Quixote kind of based on this imposter. And it's not really about Don Quixote. It's crazy.
And hold on. I can't be 100% sure, but I think I read about it that someone did write the sequel to Don Quixote at the time. I think that's based on reality.
So that might be based on reality. Someone, and it's written right into the book.
And to be fair, I just want to give a bit of historical context. That's very typical back up to the 19th century. It still is partially, but to make someone immediately writing a lesser quality sequel, and usually without permission or anything of these books. Right, okay, but he was probably a bit peed off, Mr.
I think so, But that's kind of what happens in the book, and they go off and they do a little bit more adventuring, but there's not as much, you know, little stories. He is now no longer the knight of the sad figure. He is now the knight of lions. But he introduces himself in the, you know, they always mention he who was formerly the knight of the sad figure, but who is now the knight of lions. And it just reminds me of the Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the knights who until recently said me. But it's funny a little bit, but not to the same extent, you know. I did like it. Unfortunately, there's two main themes. The first theme is he tries to find his girl, right? Dulcinea, the girl that he loves.
Of course, yeah.
And Sancho just tells him, like, oh, this girl, that's her. And he's like, it doesn't look like her. He's like, ah, she's been enchanted. He's like, but she's so ugly and small. And it's like, well, be nice. And the whole time, he's like, wizards and ghosts have come and made my girl small and ugly. And like, no, we got to break the spell, you know? And then it's unclear if the spell's on the girl or on Don Quixote himself at times, you know?
Okay.
And they kind of change a little bit. It's a bit inconsistent. And then they meet a duke and duchess who, maybe it's more clear if your Spanish is better than mine, but I'm not 100% sure if they were a real duke and duchess or not, but they make Sancho Panza a kind of governor of their fortress or whatever. And it's not really a real position, but he goes around and spends a lot of time being the governor, and he writes to his wife about how he's, you know, moving up in the world and all this kind of stuff. And we just spend like a lot of time there with him being the governor. And it's always building up. And it's building up and building up. Okay. And I'm looking ahead, like, what's all this build up? And 50 pages later, it's like Sancho's first day as the governor. And I'm like, what have they been doing for 50 pages? Like, it's just nothing's happening for long stretches of time, you know?
Ah, no. So it's just kind of filling. So it was kind of, I don't like that. You see, this is the thing with long books. I just feel like I have rarely read a very long book and felt like, oh, great that this was 1,000 pages. I mean, I think if you're going to write a big, long book, just make sure that it's worth your time and energy. You know?
It rarely is. There is a nice bit where he meets a guy and he says, I've also studied some sciences. Well, what a science have you studied? I've studied the science of the roaming knights, you know, and the guy's like, well, I haven't heard of that one. I've studied poetry. He's like, no, mine's way better than yours. It's like, right. But, you know, his isn't real. But they mention, you know, if you're a real valiant knight, should you not be at court with the king? And he kind of says, like, oh, not all knights have to do that. I'm just going to roam around and, you know, do whatever. And there's appearances by people like Don Juan and Don Jeronimo, who I thought I'd heard of, but not really a lot happens with them in the book. And there's another knight who also changes his name. He's the Knight of Mirrors, and he's the Knight of the White Moon. I love these romantic names. If only they did more characters.
And again, like, the whole book is basically a parody, or even a not just a parody, but it's also, what's the word? It's a homage to these romantic, not romantic in the time period. I mean, like, romantic setting, kind of old-fashioned courting novels that were popular in Spain and Europe at the time of publishing, or a bit before that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll give you an idea.
It doesn't sound.
Go ahead.
It just doesn't sound as Woodhouseian as the first part.
No. In the beginning, I was enjoying it more, but then it kind of went downhill quickly. There is still some humor, though. So at one point, someone says to Sancho, your friend must be crazy. And for must, they use the verb deber. And then Sancho, which also means to owe money, right?
To owe money.
So then Sancho says, what do you mean he owes? He doesn't owe anything to anyone. And it's kind of funny that they have these, like, puns, you know? So that's funny. There's a little bit of that type of humor. And at the end of the book, Don Quixote finally decides, maybe this isn't the right life for me. Maybe we should go and get into...
Hey, no, spoilers!
Okay.
No spoilers here!
I'll not cover the end.
I think most people are spoiling
a 400-year-old book.
Yeah, I mean, even I know that ending, but like, I just let it open. But it has a very, back in school. So I grew up in Spain, for your listeners, in case most of my childhood was in Spain, and we did study Quixote, and really it was a big point that the fact was Quixote lived an unreal life, and then it's just kind of. Yeah, then like reality hits him in the face eventually. It's kind of like, you know, you can't beat environment. It's that particular philosophy that environment will always crush you or flower you, whatever, but you can't go against it. So eventually realism hits the romanticism, which, which is a kind of a pity, but maybe it's also real life. I just want to remind you, Dean, that Cervantes had a very tough life. You know, he lost an arm. Mm. Or did he lose a leg? Bless him, I think he lost an arm. Correct
difficult
me if I'm wrong,
the
there,
writing.
Listeners. And difficult for the old writing, and as we see now, bookkeeping is big into horses, so it must have been very difficult. He was also captured by pirates, and he was held 5 years in captivity.
Wow, no, I didn't know that.
Before he was allowed to return in Madrid. Yeah, he had a tough time. He was in battle. He was in the Navy infantry, captured for 5 years, worked as a tax collector, which was not a great job, I can tell you that, as a purchasing agent. I think he only found slight success in publishing in the last years of his life.
Right.
So, and some of his books weren't published till afterwards. So, I mean, I can imagine that he's kind of just become cynical. I mean, it's also written 10 years later, part two. Maybe it's just, he has enough of life. I'm surprised that even so good Hubert at 65, because the pirate thing was before that. But he could still find humor. Maybe it's just he died a year after he finished, right? 1616. He was very cynical and kind of like just gave up in his own idealism, just like Don Quixote did. It's kind of sad.
I suppose it is in a way. It's a shame, you know? It's a shame. Yeah. You tell me about this, you tell me about Balzac, and the way you don't make me want to become a writer, PJ.
Yeah. Oh, no. I'm sorry. It's supposed to maybe encourage people to write. That's my intention. Like, honestly, most of these authors have terrible lives. That's why usually I started writing. I really want to become a writer, but I became very disillusioned with the lives of authors. I don't really like to live an intellectual life or kind of like an author's life. I like to write, But I just want to make sure that I'm not drinking coffee all night long like Balzac and finding
hold
his
on,
true
hold
love
on,
only
hold
1 year
I've known
before
you
he
to go spend a week in a cave writing. Like, don't tell me you're not living the author's lifestyle.
Yeah. No, I'm loving my life. And then, like, Balzac didn't go to caves. He just stayed in all night drinking coffee. And he died at 51 or 50. And he fell in love. But his health was so rotten that he just died. So I mean, don't come to me with like, look at me, I've written 150 novels, I drink coffee a day, I'm a champion, and then just die so young. It's kind of like, would you not have preferred to make love longer than just write so many novels?
Yeah, I know.
Well, that's my rant about Balzac. We usually mention him every 2 months, so that's
it comes up from time to time. I'm going to mention another one that I read, PJ. It's by your good friend Galdós, Benito Pérez Galdós.
Marianela. We're going forward. Oh, Marianela, I love that one. We're going forward, listeners, to in Spain still, to the mid 19th century to the latter 19th century. And Galdós, Benito Pérez Galdós, was born on the same island as I was, Gran Canaria, in Las Palmas. I visited his house. I know his family. No, I don't. But I visited his house. It's a museum. And he moved to Madrid and became really this is very funny that you mentioned it, because he's considered the second most important Spanish novelist after Cervantes. So we're really hitting down on the Spanish literature today. Not just because of his quantity, he wrote almost as much as Balzac, perhaps even more, but also because of his popularity. He was also nominated for the Nobel Prize a few times, didn't win it. But Marianela, I'll let you talk about it in a sec, but Marianela was the first Galdós novel I read.
Right.
Forced to me by school, to be fair. But it really made me fall in love with Galdós. And then I read the next novels, like, because I loved them so much. And it's not a realist novel. It's a romantic novel.
So it is romantic.
In its early romantic periods.
Now, this might be controversial then, PJ, but I preferred this to anything else by him that I've read.
Oh, no, dude, this is my favorite Galdós book. I think his early period as a younger writer, where he's still influenced by Romanticism, is actually, more enjoyable than his later realist period.
Now, I've not read that much. You know, you'll remember that I read Misericordia and Trafalgar. And I don't know if there was another one.
I read those. I'm a big Galdós fan. I read those. But it's nothing like Marianela or Doña Perfecta.
Which is coming up
romantic
next
early period. Recommend it. So what do you think of Marianela? Do you want to tell a story? Because I think the plot alone is great. And
well,
the setting,
first of all, I loved it. Okay, so I don't think that...
Yeah.
We just said it's romantic, so anyone who's been listening for more than one episode knows that I'm going to love it straight away. It's a short book. It's like 150 pages.
I was just about to mention, that's a really nice, compact novel. I don't feel there was anything excessive about that. He does write long novels in realism period, which just go on and on. But this one is just nice, compact, great setting in the countryside, Spanish countryside, and hit it, Dean. What's it about?
So we have this, Marianela, right? So it's the main character, and she is, it's not her real name, but she's kind of being named after her mother.
She's an orphan, right?
If she's I remember, an orphan.
Or like, or there's, yeah.
So that her mother seems to have a bad reputation in the town, and her mother took her own life. And now she's a little orphan girl, and they refer to her as Lanella or Marianella. Her mother was called something like Maria Canella or something, so they just kind of combined it to kind of get her
which
nickname.
Would be, in that time period, listener, slightly disrespectful to call someone, or just slightly, it's not really the respect that you expect, yeah.
And this girl... Basically, what she does is she hangs out with a little blind boy and she just leads him around the town and kind of acts as his guide, but also as his friend. And she falls in love with him.
And he is of an upper class, right? He is not upper class, but he is
he's above her station by a lot anyway.
That's important though. Yeah, okay.
She falls in love with him, and there's sort of an idea that maybe he loves her, but it's not clear if it's just platonically or, you know, what, but he can't see her.
I agree with you, yeah. Yeah, he can't see her. That's important.
She thinks that that's the only reason he loves her. Now, she is, she's very young. At one point, they say it's hard to believe you're not 16 or something. So, like, I think she is quite young. But she is obsessed with physical appearance and with beauty. and the romanticism of it. And she mentions, when I was young, I used to be beautiful, but I'm not anymore. And at the beginning of the novel, people try to say, no, no, you're still beautiful. What are you talking about? But then as the novel goes on, you realize, oh, no, she's actually not anymore, you know. And that is sad, because that seems to be all she cares about. And it's a shame. And she's really worried that if this boy was to see her, he wouldn't like it. He wouldn't love her anymore.
Which is interesting, because I thought she was always very beautiful. Just, I don't know why. It was always like my
impression of her.
I think
as
she's
I
a very beautiful
along.
Soul. Like,
yeah. But they just say near the end, someone does say to her, when she says to the guy, I'm not beautiful. And one guy admits it to her eventually. Everybody else the whole time tells her she is. And one guy kind of is like, yeah, I guess not.
So already we've got a romantic character, romanticized things already. But yeah, but anyway, he's blind, and then something happens.
So he has, I think it's his uncle, but someone is a surgeon and an eye specialist and helps him recover his sight. And now she's really worried.
He's got a relevant name. I remember that. What's his name again? Doctor. He's got some, the name also says it. And he is a,
the doctor's name.
I believe he is a recurring character, maybe in later Galdós novels. And I just want you to notice, though, if you're going to start reading Galdós, influenced by Balzac, Balzac was a hero, he also does the same thing. He starts creating a shared universe. Where, no, I'm not talking about Marvel or DC universe, but the same concept. The characters appearing, characters maybe younger, maybe older, appearing in different times. And yeah,
that,
this doctor,
yeah,
does
good
he
to
do
have
good?
That. So the doctor recovers, yeah. The boy recovers his eyesight, and all the time he's saying, where is Nella? Please bring Nella to me. I want to see her. Why is she not coming? You know, everyone else is coming to see me. And even his family are fairly kind to Nella, especially I think his dad. The mum's a little bit like, she's beneath us, but they get on okay. But she says, once he sees me, he's not going to love me. And there's another girl that the father says, you should really marry this girl. She's in our kind of station. Once you recover your eyesight, you'll be like more of an eligible bachelor. You should go with her. And this is sad. But the whole time, Nella is happy that he's recovered his eyesight. She's happy for him genuinely. And the girl that he's meant to marry, the fiance, Nella also loves her. She's got a little bit of jealousy, but at one point she gets to the ground and kisses her feet and says that she's an angel because she really is beautiful. And she has this love for beauty. And that's really nice to see. I mean, there's sad turns. At one point, the poor girl tries to commit suicide because of this problem, you know? So there's moments of drama and sadness in it. And am I allowed to spoil the end of this one or not? It has a sad ending. That's all I'll say then.
Let's just say it's a romantic novel that...
it's a perfect, sad, dramatic, romantic ending. It's exactly
Bronte,
what I love.
Bronte. It's kind of a Bronte-esque ending. I mean, usually they have similar endings. And remember this. This is... I think Galdós, he was always a kind of a realist and more the romanticist. I know this novel is maybe a romantic novel from the time period. Remember, listeners, that Spain was slightly later culture-wise than Germany or France. So the romantic period in literature is usually in early 19th century. But in Spain, it really only began, always began maybe 20, 30 years later. So the realist period was started maybe in the 30s, 40s, or 50s in Europe, only started maybe in the 80s, 1880s. Yeah. And that's important, but I think Galdós is already being realist because he's really showing romantic characters in a hyper-realist setting, almost a naturalist setting. Mm. It's got this very kind of like reality in your face, just like with Don Quixote at the end.
Yeah.
And the doctor is called, I had to look it up, but I knew it was relevant, in Teodoro Golfin, so which is Teodoro as in the gift of God, so Theos and the Dare. So just notice with Balzac as well that the names are relevant. Always the names
in a Dickensian
relevant,
kind
anyway,
of way.
Authors. Yeah, they're always relevant actually anyway. But Balzac, Galdós, Dickens, they do that as well. So he's supposed to be the gift of God is being given to Pablo Penagilas. So, and that for me is a bit of a play in words with Águila as an eagle, kind of like saying, eagle-eyed, except he's not, but he's now going to be given.
And the beautiful girl's called Florentina, if I remember correctly. So there's some
exactly,
beautiful flower, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas Nella is almost intentionally like just a vulgar name.
It's slightly, a vulgar
not
signing.
Vulgar name, but it's a kind of a just, it's a slightly disrespectful sounding name at that time period. So he's playing with the names as well. But yeah, don't spoil the ending, but it's very Bronte-esque.
It's very good.
Very pragmatic.
For Nella, go ahead.
No, I just want to mention also, it is realist in the sense of it's depicting this mining town in Spain. And really, it starts off the book. The book doesn't start off with any of the main characters. It just starts off with the miners and how difficult they have it kind of exiting their caves. Mm. So he is already observing society of the time and criticizing it.
I just like it because of how romantic Nella is. You know, there's a lot of...
Of course
it is. Oh, this little boy is the only person who looks at me as though I'm not beneath the dogs and the cats of the time. You know, I might as well just kill myself. And I love the melodrama, you know, that always gets me.
The melodrama, I like that. Well, that's a good, I like that. And melodrama, that might be one of her new catchwords. I think she's one of the best characters from Gael Dawson. I think she's one of the purest. I thought she was great.
Better or worse than Doña Perfecta, this book?
You know, I love both of them so much. I'd love to actually read both of them again. Mm. I think Marinella, but it might be because of the first book I ever read.
Right.
Doña Perfecta might not have as likable characters. That's the only thing I remember. But
I'm
going
to try it very soon. Maybe next month or maybe the month after, but it's very close in my queue now.
Okay. Very young author. He's writing these books, I think, in his 20s. You know, these are great books.
Good.
Wow, so talented job.
Well, I'm going to take a quick break to let everyone know that if they want to get in touch, they can get to booksboys@hotmail.com. You can still find us on the social medias, but I'm really scaling back the amount that I'm posting. But if you want to contact Books Boys Podcast on Instagram, for example, you can do that. We're also on Twitter and TikTok and booksboys.com for all our links. But we also have something called the Patreons. And if you go to patreon.com/booksboys, you can get all of our other shows. We were just talking earlier about potentially arranging some more Playboys at some point with Alex now that he's back.
Yeah.
I also will do another one with Mireia. We'll do another Spanish play. So at least I think in the next month there'll be two episodes of Playboys, hopefully. Also,
I hope so, yeah.
Dark Place Robert and I, we're still reviewing the Netflix show The Sandman, and two more episodes came out this month. We're doing two a month. And sometimes I'm really loving it, and sometimes I'm like, they've lost me again because they've done all CGI and all this modern nonsense.
It's Neil Gaiman. He's a brilliant author. I haven't seen the adaptation.
And the story is good, but sometimes they lose me with the show, the way the show is made, you know. And
i.e., you don't like comic book adaptations or graphic novels,
any of that kind of stuff. Okay. And also this month, I put out an episode of Music Man. I went way back in time, a decade, to my philosophical parodies, and I made those available on the Patreon, and I recorded 20 philosophical parody songs, some better than others, mostly terrible. Immaterial Descartes, based on Madonna's Material Girl. Early One Morning, the traditional English song, becomes Bentham One Morning. That one's a bit of a stretch. We Aren't Who We Were, We Are Who We Are, the Kesha song, becomes We Aren't Who We Were, about Locke, John Locke, and his thoughts on personal identity. Judas Priest, Breaking the Law, becomes Leibniz's Law and the Identity of Indiscernibles. You'll not find another song featuring the lyrics Identity of Indiscernibles. I can guarantee you that.
You're doing well, Dean. I'm proud of you. You're flourishing, I'm telling you.
So those are all available, and they're terrible, but I just thought I'd do a little bonus treat on the Patreon this month. So there's a lot of stuff on there.
Cool. Talking about graphic novels, Dean, it's not that I read a graphic novel this month. This month I've been taking it very easy. I'm actually still finishing The Way of the Clouds, which we reviewed last month, and very much enjoying it, meditating on it. Though next month I have a feeling I'd like to read some more novels back in the fiction, especially Halloween coming up. I do feel like some Nye Gaiman and some similar kind of author novels, so looking forward to that.
Good.
But I have been reading the very philosophical Dr. Seuss, and Dr. Seuss
and PJ, we all need to know is the cat in the hat?
No, but I find very amusing you talk about the two most important novelists in Spain ever, big books. But Dr. Seuss, I think Dr. Seuss is very underappreciated, I have to first of all say. And secondly of all, I did not grow up with Dr. Seuss. So for me, it's a new thing, actually, to be honest. It might be nostalgic for the people. If you guys remember, I did review Dr. Seuss, I think, in the March episode. Really enjoyed. I find him really relaxing. I enjoyed the illustrations. I enjoyed the stories. I enjoyed the nonsense rhymes. What I think about Dr. Seuss, the classic thing about Dr. Seuss are two things. He comes up with original animals, no matter what. He comes up with originality nonstop. No one did this before. And second of all, if he doesn't find a word that doesn't rhyme, he invents a word. I mean, just the whole beauty of it.
Nice. If you, I mean, taking after Shakespeare, right? If you can't get the word to say what you
Exactly.
want, you make one up.
Well, yeah, I mean, Shakespeare did that, and the bebop, kind of that whole generation that would come maybe after he started doing this stuff. So anyway, widely underappreciated. I read, or I watched, I enjoyed the drawings on the beach, two of his books. So If I Ran the Zoo, I did read back in springtime, If I Ran the Circus. So If I Ran the Zoo is
Whoa. So this is a real stretch for him. Like, is that something groundbreakingly different from If I Ran the Circus? Like really put pen to paper and,
No, Dean, your cynicism is not well placed here, Dean. He comes up, the concept might be similar moving from one to the next. The Dr. Seuss, the concepts might be not very different from one book, but it's always enjoyable.
It was
Always
good.
different
Yeah.
creatures.
That's what matters,
So, exactly. So last time I reviewed Thidwick, the big-hearted moose, and If I Ran the Zoo is sorry, Bartholomew and the Obelisk comes afterwards chronologically. I'm trying to read them chronologically, but I just decided to skip that. I didn't like the look
It's very, very
of it.
important, guys, with this kind of epic drama that you've got to get it in order,
And If I Ran the Zoo is the next one, highly enjoyable. It's written in anapestic tetrameter, and it's just, yeah, it's classic. What can I say? It comes up with new creatures. It's about a boy. It's about imagination. It's always the same thing. It's about a boy just opening up to the imagination and what can I do out there? I can do anything, and that's what I love about it. It's got the most amazing creatures, which other authors might try to replicate as well. It's the first book that uses the word nerd, by the way, to talk about one of the creatures. So he actually made that a thing. And I suppose nerdy comes from the fact that you look like a Dr. Seuss bird. So that's what nerdy means. Now, I won't go too much on about this one. The next one, though,
Well,
is
hold on,
Scrambled
PJ,
Eggs.
before you move on, you've convinced me. It's time to award the King of Literature to Dr. Seuss. Okay, enough. The King of Literature. There we go.
This is the thing about you, Dean. You and you as soon as a childish name appears or graphic novel or comic, how about I call him Theodore? Theodore, just like called after the doctor from Irineo. There's a coincidence. It's all linked, guys. Theodore Seuss Geisel. If I mentioned, look, if I had started all of this with, well, I read Theodore Seuss Geisel, and then like, and you'd be like, oh yeah, that's deep,
Just tell
man.
me it's from the
But I've
18th
seen it.
century and you've got me,
Yeah, as long as I give its full name from the passport and it's just older and I don't mention that there are drawings, you're fine about it. So Theodore or Dr. Seuss, the next book I read was Scrambled Eggs Super. Now, what can I say about this, guys? These are great books for kids. They're kids' books, yeah. They're very young kids' books. But what can I say? I think they're great. So even as an adult, I'm really enjoying them. I can see Dean here in my camera, and his smile is priceless. There are mixed emotions all over the place.
You are selling me on
The
it. It does sound good. It sounds like you enjoyed it.
So, Scrambled Eggs Super tells a story of Peter T. Hooper, and who's making scrambled eggs. He's trying to impress a lady friend, and saying, "Well, I don't want to boast, but I'm an amazing cook. Let me tell you about it. Actually, I'd like to quote the beginning of that. If anything Dr. Seuss does is, it's the rhyming is perfect. I love it. So, I don't like to brag and I don't like to boast, said Peter T. Hooper. But speaking of toast, and speaking of kitchens and ketchup and cake, and kettles and stoves and the stuff people bake, well, I don't like to brag, but I'm telling you, Liz, that speaking of cooks, I'm the best that there is. Why, only last Tuesday when Mother was out, I really cooked something worth talking about. This is a classic Dr. Seuss paradigm. You start off with something someone did or something that I would do, and then the whole book is just like imagination flourishing. And he just comes up. It's the same concept as if I ran the zoo. He just captures exotic creatures and just the rhythm is nonsense, and it's a delight for the senses. Now, going on the darker road here, Dr. Seuss is very much of his time. His children books, some of them are not allowed to be printed anymore.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Because they might be. Yeah, I think it's If I Run the Circus had the mention of had the word Eskimo in it, and supposedly that's not a good word to use anymore. So,
right.
Anyway, what I can say, though, more importantly, is that I think making a book about capturing animals and capturing eggs from birds and they're all smiling is not really up to date. So I think a conscious children's book should obviously be about, you know,
okay.
No, honestly, because I've written a children's book about, I've written a children's book about animals being captured. And I would never write this kind of nonsense. And I'm a vegan as well. So, I mean, I'm pushing it with scrambled eggs here. I'm pushing it with scrambled eggs. I don't eat scrambled eggs. But this is how much I like Dr. Seuss. I just go beyond that. It's like two brothers, you know, they have different opinions, but you still want to meet up for Christmas dinner, you know, and get along well. So that's me, Dr. Seuss. I'm very fond of him. Some of his ideology is very antiquated.
Okay.
That's all I have to say. Read it, watch it, and it's beautiful. So Dr. Seuss. Or can I just say that the not Dr. Seuss, how about Theodore Seuss Geisel?
Yeah, that's it. Shall we bookend the segment, PJ? Shall we bookend the segment? Okay.
The doctor of literature. How are we can call him that? That's real. Right? The doc of lit. Doc lit.
There we go. Like guys, before we move on, this month's sponsor, it's helpforrappers.gov. If you're a rapper and you like the hippity hoppity and the boom boxes, go to helpforrappers.gov where we will tell you how to trade your boombox for a copy of the complete works of Shakespeare, and you can study drama with us. So,
and also sponsor for today is Tizzle Topwood Grew's Company. In a tree down the street, and I knew her from her looks corporation. So if you're looking for some amazing vegan scrambled eggs and don't know where to find them because it's not vegan, well, just look up this imaginative, completely fake company and you'll find some recipes.
Good. I'm going to quickly play this great ad for our Patreon.
The facts that will be presented are true.
Yes, PJ.
Hello there.
Dean, as always, joined by Mireia. Say hello.
Hello.
Dark Place Robert and Playboy Alex.
Doing all right. Glad to be here again.
So I've given you those nicknames.
I'm not a fan of that one.
Well, that's where people will know you from.
Nobody's
that's why.
Going to know me from that one, but let's carry on anyway.
Hello there. Can you hear me?
Join us for Shakespeare written, Spanish plays and poetry, rock star interviews, film reviews, Dark Place Dreamers, and more. Patreon.com/booksboys.
There we go, guys. Get it, buy it, Patreon at books.
Nice. I do want to thank everyone for, you know, joining Patreon. Actually, that's just, make it sound like a compliment. That just sounds like the most cynical comment of the whole show. No one, I don't think many people have signed up yet. So actually,
get on there. Friends are already there. Follow them.
So yeah, okay. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for joining us. But how about this? Thank you for joining us right after listening to this.
Now, anyone listening who hasn't joined, feel the guilt, feel the moral culpability. Get on it.
Get
it's
on
like
it, guys.
Quid.
Really, it's very little. It's €2.50, right? I always get them confused. Actually, I'm
We're
not even trying.
Paying you, you know.
For your time, so far. Yeah, so look. And look, you can listen to this anywhere in the car. You can listen to this while cooking up some scrambled eggs or preparing your lovely vegan meal for your lovely wife. You know, you can intimate moments. I mean, if you want to get intimate with your partner, you know, well,
and who doesn't?
Don't be shy. I mean, don't be shy. We've got 24 episodes of this, but I mean, that's only 24 lovely romantic nights. And if you need more material, don't feel shy. Dot dot dot. I think
we've got 100 episodes or so on our Patreon altogether. So
plenty of central. Just make sure your kid isn't listening for this segment. But for the adults out there, you know what I mean. I'm winking. I don't think anyone can see me.
Now, this is great for an audio medium.
So that's all about me and Theodore, not Dr. Seuss, Dr. Lit. What about you, Dean? What else did you get into?
I feel that this is going off the rails. I went back to Dumas and I read one of the sequels to the Joseph Balsamo stuff. And
are you ever not going to read a Dumas book?
PJ, this was a disaster, this book. Never figure out what I'm reading for a start with Dumas. And I couldn't, you know, I read last time part one and part two, we think. Parts three and four I couldn't find. Now I've got something. I think it's like maybe part five. Like, I don't know what. Well, this is.
And the funny thing is that one of your favorite Dumas books is a plagiarized book, not written by him, right?
Yes.
I mean, is on the top list.
It is. This book is called The Countess de Charny. Okay. Mm.
It's real. It's Dumas Père. Yeah, it's
yes.
Him.
And I thought, well, I don't know who this countess is. So I went and read it, and it turns out it's just Amelia from the previous books. So it's fine. She's not a countess.
Right. Okay.
Like, this wasn't great. You can tell that it's the middle part of a series. Like, you know, it doesn't have a beginning or an end. It just kind of picks up and drops off. Not really a lot happens. It's fairly weak as far as a Dumas goes. In the beginning, we think that Gilbert is going to be our main character. That's the little boy who went and hung out with Jean-Jacques Rousseau. And then at the very end of one of the other books, he gets Amelia pregnant. What's happened now is a lot of time has passed. So we're many years later. Gilbert is now a respected doctor, and he's able to go in and talk with the queen, who is Marie Antoinette.
Remind me of the name of this book again? Because this is not one of the famous ones, is it?
The Countess de Charny.
Is like this? Okay, Countess de Charny.
Well, I won't say Charny, but it's just Charny. There's no A in it.
But I just want to ask, before we continue, is this based on a real countess or a real person?
I don't think so. I mean, people appear as always. You know, Marie Antoinette's in it.
Yeah, that's why.
16th is in it, you know? Maybe the countess is real. I don't know. But we have Joseph Balsamo, the sorcerer, again, and he still wants to bring down... he survived the story events of the previous books, and he still wants
to bring down
the
monarchy. He's caused a lot of trouble in our podcast.
He has.
Joseph Balsamo, you know, a lot of confusion.
But in the end, he doesn't really appear that much. And then Gilbert stops being the main character, and he doesn't appear much either. And a lot of it is just Louis XVI trying to avoid, being beheaded, to be honest. He's really worried that he'll follow the fate of Charles I in England. And, you know, this revolution brewing, and Balsamo's theoretically behind that, I guess, his cult of Freemasons and things. And it's just about them trying to do this. So the second half of the book, and it's only about 300 pages, like most of the book is all about Marie Antoinette and Louis XVI. And there is a nice character, a certain Monsieur Guillotin, who invents a nice little machine called the guillotine, which he believes will make executions quicker and remove the need for hanging.
Wow, how charming.
Yeah, lovely, lovely work, you know, doing God's work.
I wonder what Doc Litt would have to say about that. But anyway.
Continue. I don't know. The problem with Balsamo is they never call him Balsamo in this book. So you may remember that
this is what you said last time about his book. They never call him anything. Yeah.
So he was the Count Joseph Balsamo, but he was also.
Among 100 other names.
He was also the Count. No, he's the Baron Balsamo, the Count de Phoenix, Akarat, I think, was one. He's like his ancient name. Now he appears. Then he's Cagliostro. Then he's Cagliostro.
Oh,
and sometimes they call him Cagliostro in this, but then he says, "No, I have a new name. I am the Baron Zanini from Genoa." So,
right, okay.
I don't know. Like, he's just going around with all these different identities and different names, and he faked his own death at one point and put his clothes onto a dead guy so that he could come back in a new identity.
So he sounds like a man who if the party, you know, winds down a bit and you want to get it back up again, just bring him in like last minute. So.
He's always there. But one of the most important things he does in this book is he gives some money to a kid, and the kid's parents are doing so poorly that the kid runs in and the dad takes the money, and then Balsamo comes in again and sort of, and he knows everything, you know, and he just kind of says, well, how are things going? And the guy says, I got no money. And he says, apart from the two Louis that you took off your kid there. And he gives the kid two more, you know, so he knows.
All right. Yeah. Interesting.
And the mother is Nicole, who was the friend from the original book who ran off with a guy. So that's her only appearance in this, just a little cameo from her. Hmm. But Gilbert's going around and he meets up with the mother. And there's a funny scene where they've got a little son now, Sebastian, and he says he wants to talk to his father. And he says, I want to talk to my papa. And he's been with his father all this time. The problem is he wants to see his mother and his father, you know? So he goes into the mother, and the mother basically, who's the Countess of Charnay, not Amelia, Andrea. And then he basically asks about his dad, you know, and she slanders the father, not slanders, but she basically says he wasn't a very good person. I mean, he raped her, so, you know, he wasn't a good person. And all of a sudden, all of the children's love fades. And he's like, mother, how could you speak about my father like this? To whom I owe everything. I was wrong, madame. You cannot be my mother. And he runs off and she's all sad and crying, you know. So the love vanishes very quickly.
It just sounds very confusing. Like, yeah. I mean, I do like, I met Dumas, you know, ignoramus completely. So I would like to read his bigger novels, like his most famous novels. But they don't sound that great, Dean, these novels that you're reading from him that are at the back catalogue of Dumas, you know? I just hear thousands of names. I just get very confused. I mean, think you're doing a good job, but like, you're just like, yeah. I don't think Dumas is maybe doing such a clear job, you know?
This book is not great. And a lot of it is just about the king and queen, to be honest. But if that's a boring story, I don't have a lot to say about that. I'm more interested in the side characters and their quests of love. So Andrea, her big secret is that she loves her husband. Because they got married for convenience. They got married for convenience sake. But actually they both fell in love with each other immediately, but neither knows it. So they've been married for 10 years, both with permanent heartache because they're both in love with each other, but they can't tell each other, you know, I'm sorry for all these years of heartache I've given you and all this kind of thing. And in the end, this is a very, very minor spoiler, but I have to give it.
These people are really suffering, Dean.
She sends a letter, which is only to be opened if he's dying. And there's all these instructions that he's only allowed to open it if he's like in his last breath. And it turns out that she loves him, but she was only going to tell him if he was dying. And she's so angry that he's managed to open it, but he's still alive. And then he's like, but I also love you. He's like, oh no, what? And they can be together, you know? So well, they're already together because they're married.
Yeah, well, that's the worst part. Oh, for God's sake.
So it's kind of ridiculous things, you know, but that's what she does. We see a little bit of Gilbert. We see a little bit of Balsamo. Gilbert's very respected now, and he's going around being a doctor, and he's talking to Marie Antoinette. Really what the book is about is people giving advice to the king and queen and saying, be less haughty, go and help the parliament, you know, be less of a ruling monarch and move with the times. And they're kind of saying, no, they don't want to do that. And Marie Antoinette is just like, even when they're giving her advice to save her life, she's like, how dare you speak to me like that? I'm your queen. And it's like, well, actually, I think that you're kind of a crappy person and that you're going around being mean to your friends. So they're not afraid to say it to her face, you know, but she's very arrogant.
Right, okay. I'm sorry, David. It doesn't make me want to read the book necessarily. I mean, a better job was Don Quixote or...
I wouldn't read this one.
Okay.
I'm not recommending this one necessarily. Because, you know, we see some characters that only pop up for a chapter or two. And it's very clear. That's what I mean. It's very clear that not a lot's happening in this book. It's just linking different parts. It's like part 5 of 9 or something, you know. So it's very clear that we're just waiting for something else maybe to happen in the future. And, you know, even at the end, I thought, well, there'll be a big climax. The king and queen will get killed. But, like, no, that doesn't even happen, you know.
Right, again.
They avoid the trouble at the end of it. And the final dramatic end, this isn't really a spoiler, by the way, because the final ending, the way the book closes is with this lovely bit where she's like, how can I possibly thank this guy for all the help he's given me? And he kind of says, like, you know, I'm going to risk my life. I'm probably going to die for you. But all the thanks I need is to be able to kiss your hand. And then because she's so beautiful and so royal, he can't even bring himself to kiss her hand. And he just touches it. And it's like, that is thanks enough for my life, you know?
Well, look, it is Dumas, you know. I mean, supposedly I had a lot of mistresses, you know. Not that I'm judging, but he seems to have why am I talking about Dumas' mistresses here? What I'm saying is, I think I'm more interested in Dumas' life and the fact that he's okay. I think we just delete that part of the episode.
No, it's fine. Keep going.
No, I don't want to say. Okay, you can keep it in the episode. I'm officially premiering. Keep it, because it just makes this. No, I don't know why I'm talking about mistresses. I think I just read like he's got a lot of mistresses. That's like the most interesting part. Because it just doesn't sound very interesting to me. These novels. I'm more interested in the trivia that, oh, did you know that Dumas had like 40 mistresses? Yeah. I said no, I did not though. That's very interesting. More interesting than the whole book. So
this,
yeah,
this book was not in. So. Well, now I feel bad.
It's interesting that I have 40 mistresses. I, you know, not judging, just interesting.
I feel bad, PJ, because if you thought that this wasn't interesting,
oh no,
wait till you see the next book.
I'm not looking forward to it. What's this?
So I looked at my shelf and I thought, what can I sneak in the last? I did read one more book, but I'm saving it for the end. I thought, what can I sneak into the last few days of the month? Something around 300 pages I can get through, and so many exciting books, you know. Books in English, books in Spanish, modern classics, old classics, so many great things, some Greek stuff. I thought, I know what I'll read. Scenes of Clerical Life by George Eliot. So the most exciting book I could find.
That's very exciting stuff.
Scenes of Clerical Life.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.